Maggie gives me the evil eye.
What?
I read somewhere you say that you were nostalgic for mystery. What did you mean by that?
I guess that's the, something we've talked about sometimes is our music is, it might sound like it's trying to sort of capture a particular era or, you know, atmosphere that's redolent of a particular era. But I think when you really delve into it, it's not actually any specific era. It's kind of this mash of different times and places that never really existed. And I guess it's kind of like we're nostalgic for a place that we never experienced and that probably never even really existed.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I read somewhere recently that nostalgia is like a really positive thing in people's lives. It's something that kind of brings comfort, and I think we definitely find that. Our parents find it really odd that we're always romancing about the past, but I think it's something that we feel kind of very connected to. But at the same time, it is this world that we've kind of constructed ourselves that doesn't actually exist.
In a way, all nostalgia is that as such. It's a kind of idealised version of the past that people are kind of reminiscing and yearning for.
Yeah, rose-tinted glasses.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a homesickness for something that you never had, you know. It's like the reason people connect with it is it's something that has passed that you will never get back, and it's a feeling. And I personally love the way that music can sort of take you to places, and you can remember when you hear a certain song exactly where you were, what the weather was like, to the kind of pinpoint degree of that of like a train spotter or something, you know. And I think that it's this amazing doorway into these feelings that could never be visceral, they could never actually exist, but it's just comforting. It's just,
do you think nostalgia is a positive thing?
Yeah, definitely.
I kind of do, but I think that you don't want to live in the past too much. I think there's so many amazing things happening every day that you don't want to sort of get lost in your own.
What is it you say? Don't wish your life away.
Yeah.
But you were very emphatic there when you said yes, it definitely is a positive thing.
Like, yeah, but so like all positives, you know, not to the detriment of all that, in moderation.
Because I think about the mystery. What I thought was part of that was a kind of nostalgia for when pop music had an innocent sort of sense of itself, and that you could be a pop group and the development of your career, if you like, happened in a certain way that doesn't happen anymore because of, you know, obviously the internet and the community spirit that goes on, and that you were almost yearning for that sort of sense of secrecy that was often very important about pop music, which to some extent sort of exists now with the bloggers, but it's almost instantly ruined.
We don't have a problem with anyone doing that. I don't think it's negative to kind of be on Twitter and talking about what you're doing every day if you're in a band. We both have personal Twitter accounts, but it's that I think there used to be that thing that you would go out and you'd buy a magazine because it had your favourite band on the cover, and you'd pore over every article, and those things would be the things that you basically, it was hard to get hold of. It wasn't just in your face every single day, and you know, going home and like looking at all the artwork and trying to work out what they were thinking about working, what they were singing about, you know, you didn't know what the lyrics were. And I think it just sort of built bands up to be these things, which might be a negative thing, but I never thought it was, almost these people that you looked up to and that, you know, you kind of couldn't wait to see the next thing that they do. And I feel like it kind of has been spoiled. We were secret by accident. We didn't start out thinking this is the best way to be in a band.
It wasn't some Machiavellian plot. It was...
But I think even if we hadn't been, I think we would have kind of tried to keep that sort of distance.
Mm. But it's kind of come around now, because now there is this thing of, like, it is a bit cool, in inverted commas, to maintain some sense of mystery, and, like, bands are being told not to have MySpaces by the record labels, and, you know, like, the Vaccines is a new band that seemed to be doing that really well. They've kind of managed to hold back quite a lot of information about themselves.
I had a band many years ago called Art of Noise, and set about the same principle in a way, masked, anonymous. It seemed something almost glamorous about that idea, that people couldn't pin it down, didn't know where it was from or how it had emerged, and it seems to, you know, play into that idea of, for me, what pop music is about, you know, the way that you can reinvent yourself to such an extent you almost disappear because you've got so many potential characters, you know.
Definitely.
Like Lady Gaga.
So. Or even,
well, unfortunately.
Or like Bowie, you know, he killed himself. Yeah. Like, you know, he killed one of his characters. And I think that's what you buy into. I think music's such a personal thing that everybody will take something different from it. You know, every song will mean something different to every person that hears it. And now there isn't really a way to do that other than by retaining all information about yourself and keeping yourself very far away from the sort of public eye.
But also there's something very interesting with the modern world where once upon a time at a certain level where you were, you wouldn't really be being interviewed an awful lot. There would be no sense of presence. Whereas even though you're not household names and that you're not pop stars in that tradition of the pop star, you have a very, very great internet presence. There was lots of interviews with you. You are doing a lot of interviews.
We get emails.
All ask the same questions.
Yeah.
But we get emailed asking for an interview on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
It's like fanzine culture.
Yeah,
the
it's
the
grassroots,
difference is that anybody
you know?
Can find these fanzines by just typing in the name of a band that's been featured into them into Google.
You know, in the 60s, 70s and 80s, a group would sit into a particular way that they were being written about and talked about, and it did have a sort of sense of creating a context. The context would unfold, and I wonder what it's like now being a group that is in the middle of an equivalent of it, but it's very rapid and it's very constant.
Well, it's funny. I mean, people seem to have real expectations about bands based on very minimal kind of input. I mean, when we did our first few gigs, we definitely felt like people had very specific expectations of what it was going to be like, which they wouldn't have had if they hadn't already heard the music and read the interviews and seen the MySpace pictures or whatever. I think, you know, that can be quite tough on your confidence as a new band, because you feel like if we suck on this first outing, everyone's going to, you know, everyone who came is going to be able to tell everyone else who didn't come on the internet.
When we played that first gig, that was the fourth time I'd ever sung live. And we did suck. and it was horrible. You know, I did the thing of going on Google and seeing what people were saying about us and searching on Twitter. Mm. And, like, you just, it is really horrible. But at the same time, it's great that you kind of get that feedback almost. And that I feel like we've been really lucky in that we've had the opportunity to develop sort of in our own time.
I feel that you're a hidden treasure, but I'm wondering where the moment comes where your hidden treasureness can be properly... I mean, is it appearing on an edition of X Factor? Is it appearing on the Graham Norton Show? Is there moments when feel you've crossed over into the world of pop?
The death of Top of the Pops, I think, is such a huge tragedy. And there's this weird thing now as well where I feel like pop split into sort of glossy, shiny, perfect pop, but then also pop that's, you know, like Dirty Projectors, which I kind of think is pop, which is talked about in such a sort of high way, where it's like this art form rather than just pop.
It's like high culture, low culture.
Yeah, exactly. And you've kind of feel like, oh, Jay-Z's talking about Grizzly Bear, that means that they've made it. Mm. Is that what it is? I don't know.
Mm. What do you think
of
what whether you're asking us, whether there is a whether there is a place for a, you know,
what the moment,
surely it's this.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be great if that was so? I guess I'm looking for myself, you know, because it's two ways of looking at everything at the moment. There's great access to wonderful and exciting music that's in the tradition of that, of strangeness, if you like, you know. But on the other hand, the world of pop seems to be so polluted and appropriated by the television and Simon Cowell, and they've you know, taken over, and there is room for their version of strangeness, if you like. So, you know, Cher, for instance. Mm. But the true nature of where the strangeness might be now, which I think is in bands like you, on one hand, it seems to be there because everybody talks about you in a funny sort of way. But on the other hand, there was a great moment in about 1972 when Mark Boland appeared on The Cilla Show. And I know I'm being nostalgic, but there, I think the possibility of equivalence of that has slightly gone, you know.
I think, you know, it's really exciting when, like, a band goes massive while sticking to their guns and sticking to their way of doing things. I feel like the sort of the question we're skirting around is it really possible for a band to do that these days? And I don't know what the answer is.
Would you like it to happen, do you? I mean, is that something that plays into your sort of conceit of what summer camp could be?
Yeah, if you could take us as we are now and stick us on Cilla Black, then definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm. Surprise, surprise. Trying through to you, my dear. I think we would love to, not because, you know, we want to be famous, but because of what that would mean.
Do you have an ideological fervour? You mentioned about nothing necessarily wrong with X Factor and Cher Lloyd. But on the other hand, in terms of what you're talking about, that seems to be a huge dark obstacle in the way of our kind.
Don't think so, mm-hmm. because, if you look back in time, there's always been, you know, your James Lasts or your Engelbert Humperdincks.
Yeah.
And X Factor isn't really doing anything different to that. It's just mass
Simon
market
Cowell
pop.
Orchestra, isn't it?
I think the kind of people who would get into our kind of pop, as you say, are probably, they're not being lured away by Simon Cowell. They're probably being lured away by, I don't know, video games.
Or they
games.
Don't buy music.
Mm. Or just, yeah.
That's the thing, is that the people who watch X Factor are still going out and buying records, CDs. You know, it's like, I think that's what's different, is that when there was Humperdinck, there were still people, the people who weren't into Humperdinck would go out and spend money on, you know, whoever else they wanted to, that was alternative then.
Well, the other thing about the Humperdinck, of course, is when he went out on tour, he would go out on tour with the Stones.
Yeah.
There didn't seem to be such a division. I mean, yeah. Obviously we talk about now how the world has broken down in terms of people liking everything, whereas once upon a time it was very compartmentalised. But now, in a sense, there is a big division, isn't there? I was just wondering if you had an implicit sort of a sense of wanting to fight it, or whether you just feel it's impossible or not necessary to fight it.
I kind of feel like it's not necessary.
I'd agree with that.
I mean, last year, Rage Against the Machine were number one for their Christmas single, and it's like, that's great. But
ironically, they're also on Sony.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of... I think X Factor is so uncool. People watch X Factor as entertainment. It's a talent show, you know. It's like Opportunity Knocks. Mm. It just happens that then people graduate from Opportunity Knocks and go and sell like records.
And then the CD is almost like a souvenir of the. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
of the,
but
the
I don't feel threatened by it, because I feel like it exists in this completely different world to the one that we sort of operate in, and I wouldn't want to, you know, if the solution to that was, like you say, Stones and Humperdinck, was us going on X Factor, I'd feel very uncomfortable about that, because I just don't think it's the same thing. I don't think, you know, I don't have a problem with it ideologically, but I don't think I would want to be associated with it. And I kind of feel like by fighting it, you're sort of saying, you're kind of acknowledging that there is this thing that you need to sort of conquer, when actually I think most people who would like our kind of music would just find that really bizarre if we suddenly kind of printed up a manifesto against Simon Cowell. I don't know. Those are people who want to be famous. Those aren't people who want to be musicians.
So to that extent, the X Factor thing is about something else. It's about fame. It's not about music as such.
Yeah,
it uses music
so.
As its soundtrack, because it seems appropriate, but it's not really...
What I find really weird is Cheryl Cole. I love Cheryl Cole. I think she's amazing. But she's released this album, which is all about her breakup with Ashley. So every single song is about that. She hasn't written a single one. And I just think, why would you do that? Why would you be like, yeah, can you write me some songs about my breakup so I can sing them? You know, it's bizarre.
Jeremy, you mentioned before about a couple of genre names you mentioned there, Witch House and Creep, and nice names for once, as you say, because a lot of genre names are really plain and pragmatic, aren't they? Mm. And you've had a couple flung at summer camp that are a little bit peculiar. I just wondered if you had a preferred sense of what you would imagine and hope your genre that you fitted into was called.
Well, I would say, you could ask that to any band, And, you know, even a band called, you know, with the word ska in the title would be uncomfortable placing themselves in the genre of ska, you know what I mean? I think when you're making music, you can't let yourself be limited by other people's perceptions of what you are or what you ought to be. And as such, we've never sat down and been like, oh, we're going to be a lo-fi band or a glo-fi band or a chillwave band. We know those are names that other people have applied to us, and we're comfortable with that, but also we reserve the right to make a ska song at some point.
yeah, absolutely.
But it doesn't define you. It's just it's like shorthand, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But the point is that we don't go out and try and make a chillwave song.
You know, is there a sense where you're in your songs, you in a way invent an idea of pop history and become part of that, if you like?
I think we're definitely ambitious with it, and I think that I really like the idea that we kind of set out to create a sort of world that our songs would exist in, you know, like the world of films.
Especially with the images and the
I was just going to say, is that more just an aesthetic that you like rather than thinking it will work in a marketing sense? If it's not like creating
completely.
A brand.
That was because when we made the band, we didn't want to have photos of ourselves on there because we didn't want our friends to stumble across it and be like, what are you two idiots doing? So that was just more like, I have this huge collection of those kind of photos. So we just thought, I'll use some of them. It's like I like those photos for completely different reasons, the fact to what I like about our music, but at the same time, they seem to fit together.
They seem to complement each other.
But I think
really
just
well.
Because we're the people that pick the photos and we're the people that make the music.
I would say that there was a point sort of a couple of months in where we kind of took a step back and looked at everything, you know, the photos and all the music we made up to that point. And it became obvious that, like, although we couldn't put our finger on it, there was a certain type of thing that we were doing that did all fit together. And then that kind of made it easier to sort of say, well, where are we going to go from here? It's kind of like, you know, people sometimes say to Elizabeth, oh, you know, you've got your look. Oh, you know, this item of clothing here would fit in with your look. And for Elizabeth, she then says something like,
I've got a great look.
What are you talking about? I don't, you know. And it's kind of like you can't really put your finger on it yourselves, but to other people it's really obvious.
Anyway, Jeremy Elizabeth at Summer Camp, I'm already nostalgic for this conversation. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alex.